Can you hear me? You can hear me without the microphone, probably, right? Make a difference. So we are recording, yes. I have to keep reminding myself to turn this thing on. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Messy weather out there, huh? They're getting kind of snagged up, I guess, with our stupa project here, because they've got to dig out and put bricks in and do other stuff, so they haven't been able to finish things up, but maybe someday when you come, maybe before the end of these classes, you'll see something finished up out there. So, let's go ahead and just do a few minutes of meditation to kind of get things started, and then we can have a little discussion. Is this the first night for anybody? Okay, and we talked a little bit out there too. We'll talk a little bit more. Here in a bit. I failed to say that. I failed to check that early on last time. So, was last week the first time for some people? It was. Okay, my name's David, by the way. I do that the first time, and then I forget after that. So. David Maclis, and I've been a member here since 2004, 2005, something like that. So, all right. So what we're going to do is we'll sit. We've got 7 points that we're going to kind of focus on. Our feet flat on the floor, or if you're sitting in a cushion, sit on the cushion. Usually with your knees lower than your hips if you can. It helps keep your back straight a little bit. And then your back needs to be stacked up straight with a little, the natural curve, but like a stack of coins. Your hands on your knees, or a traditional pose would be your right hand and your left. The top of your head, crown of your head, kind of coming up a little bit. Your jaw hanging, pointing forward a little. The tongue at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. And your eyes either closed or slightly open. And then before we get started, let's take a few breaths in and out. Picture kind of pure light going in, impurities coming out. And then take a moment to remind yourself why you ventured out on a night like tonight to come here. There were certainly other things you could have done, but something motivated you to do that. Probably something good. Just take a minute to set that motivation and remind yourself of that. Now we're going to focus on our breathing. Count the breaths as they go in and out. And try to watch the breath for the entire in-breath, when it switches over for the entire exhalation, and then switches back to inhalation. Thank you. Now I want you to think about change for a moment. Think about how we're changing moment by moment. Ask yourself, is there anything that is not changing? Think about your body as you breathe in and out. The oxygen enters your lungs as you inhale. It's picked up by blood cells and carried throughout your body. Other gases and waste are picked up by those cells and brought back to the lungs and expelled as you exhale. Throughout the day, your body takes in new materials and expels old materials. We're breathing in oxygen atoms that have been around for eons. The components of the food that you ate, think of them as they become absorbed in your body. And old materials are excreted. Think about the fact that your blood cells die every 120 days and are replaced with new ones constantly. About every 4 weeks, your skin cells die and fall off, and new ones are becoming created all or being created all the time. About 30,000 skin cells die a minute. And each cell that quietly dies can be traced through an unbroken chain of cell divisions backward in time through an almost unimaginable 4 billion years. To the emergence of the earliest forms of cellular life on the planet. Quite literally, we're not the same body we were a year ago. Nor are you the same body you're going to be a year from now. In your mind, just scan around the room and think of any object and ask, is that object changing? The clothes we wear, the furniture, the building, all of them are changing. What did they look like a year ago, or 5 years ago, or 20 years ago? Or what will they look like a year from now, or 5 years, or 20 years? take a moment to realize that every other human in this room will be gone 100 years from now. Take time to reflect on the nature of change. Realize everything is changing, so anything is possible. Were you able to follow along with that analytical meditation? Could you vision those things and see the reality in that? As we had our train rumble by, the train changed. How did everybody do this last week? Everybody have a chance to practice for a few minutes every day, or? What were some of our experiences? Anybody have anything you want to share for the week? Difficulties? Something that went well? Something that didn't go well? Yes, sir. Thank you.
It was kind of difficult, like the week before. It went well.
Huh?
Had difficulty finding time this week, and when I did, it wasn't always clicking, you know.
Yeah.
But end of the week, I think what I got out of it was maybe each session that I tried wasn't so great, but I realized that the days that I missed, when I missed, like, I'd gotten used to it already, and I just felt kind of like, you know how you talk about breathe in, light, breathe out?
Right, right.
It felt like I just had this buildup. Soot is probably strong, but I just felt like, man, today I need to find time because I just felt a little ickier or something.
Good. No, you know. That was refreshing. But probably the fact that you missed it, you know, and you recognize you felt better when you did it. Sometimes it's hard to know, I think, because we know how we feel when we don't sit. So, I don't know how to explain this. So, maybe it's we didn't realize how miserable we always had been until we started sitting. Does that make sense? Because how, you know, maybe that how you feel, you missed it, but you've always missed it, you know? So, I don't know.
In connection with that, I found out that 5 minutes went too fast. And in fact, I was disappointed at the end.
Okay.
And I was thinking, wait a minute, I wasn't done yet. And, you know, the phone started beeping.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually put for another 5 minutes and did the double session, you know, just like, you know, to kind of reiterate what the gentleman was saying, I also felt the need to be able to do it. However, I did find that the simplest method for me that worked this past week was accounting. But I tend to overanalyze things, and after I was done with the meditation, I asked myself, well, was I really meditating if I was doing something external like counting instead of focusing on the internal peace and stillness and awareness? But, you know, I kind of
That's good. Yeah, I mean, your mind starts playing these little tricks. Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
The meditation for the sea needed to be quite difficult.
Yeah.
I was very distracted.
Okay. The sky worked better?
The sky, as long as there were no clouds.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
When the clouds started showing up, then, you know, the possibility of a storm.
Okay.
And then, you know, other thoughts would come.
Okay.
In connection with that. So as long as it was blank.
Yeah.
More or less.
All right.
I seemed to do better.
Do you find yourself looking at the sky?
Yes.
Or do you find yourself imagining your mind is expansive like the sky?
No, I look at the sky.
Okay.
And that's the thing that I'm struggling with, because I don't see myself
being it.
Yes.
That's fine. Yeah, as long as you can begin to kind of visualize your mind is expansive like that. That's the same with the ocean. Somebody else shook their head about the ocean back there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would distract me. Like a fish or a cloud. But for sure, it's ocean. I mean, the sky was a little bit simpler because the cloud, to me, was just sort of like a formless thing.
Right.
As far as like, oh, God, this fish or that fish. Or
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But like she said, like, I felt like if it was blank, it would be easier for me to do.
Right. So it's probably easier to make a blank sky than a blank ocean, I'm guessing. But if you can, you know, I do the same thing. So I see myself staring at the sky or staring at the ocean. One of the books, I can't remember which one it was, they talk about, imagine like a movie screen, right? But instead of you're watching it, be it. And so that's what we're trying to do with the sky, is try to have our mind be the sky. And I can do, if I'm doing that with the ocean, that seems to work better for me, because I can get that. There's a physical piece to it that I can kind of expand into. So, but it's all, you know, it's all effort, and you're doing it right. You're doing it right in recognizing that you're questioning whether you do it right. You know? That's a huge step. So, other things? You were going to say something else?
Yeah. What you just talked about with, like, watching the sky versus being... Last week you had said something about, you had used some of that same language about your mind being as expansive as the sky or something, and so I was having trouble, like, it sounds like other people were watching it, and then, okay, now a thought, and so it becomes a cloud, and then, oh, wait, I'm thinking about the clouds, wait a minute, and that was trouble. I had a lot of trouble with that, so I remembered you said that, but I thought I was doing it a way that I wasn't supposed to be, so it was more like just kind of, I don't want to say thinking about it, but if I just let myself kind of be the expansive sky, then the clouds, like thoughts, I wouldn't even have to picture them as they came up as being clouds, I just let them go away like clouds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't picturing them as the shape of a cloud.
Right.
Okay, now they drift away, and that works great.
Yeah, yeah.
But trying to, like, sit and I'm watching a screen of the sky, I had a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's a little bit. But our minds want to go back there, it seems like, sometimes. Other things people had? Obstacles? Find it easy? Are you having trouble with... laxity or excitation? So do you notice that during certain times of day that your mind is more excited, that creates a challenge, or is it certain times of day that you tend to want to kind of drift off, you know? Yeah. That's a balancing act too, you know, because you want to be awake, fully awake, and yet relaxed. So it's that, you know, it's kind of a fine line, and that's a long time in finding that middle of the road. So don't worry about if you're, you know, if you lean one direction or the other. I still struggle. I mean, everybody still struggles with times when it's just. Our Geshe talks about, you know how they could sleep sitting up. They did used to be able to do a good job. So, you know, everybody struggles with that. But, you know, you have to just kind of keep working. And the time of day, I think, makes a difference for a lot of people, too. So, yes, sir?
Yeah, it makes mornings an interesting time, book or work, where I'm more sleepy and anxious.
Okay.
At the same time, so it's an interesting time. But I like... I was able to establish a habit, just get up a little earlier, where at the end of the day, when it might be more peaceful, I tend not to have the same structure.
Okay. That's good.
So, but it's something to think about, is incorporating some of the night. And I like here, because it kind of brings that where I don't have the same anxiety, so I'm a little bit able to focus.
Yeah. I find the same way. If I after this class, I feel... It feels good. I wouldn't do this at home at this time. So this is good for me. I look forward to this and doing some of the other evening classes the same way. But, you know, the thing is, so we get back to what is meditation? It's GOM. It's becoming familiar with our minds. And all of these things that we're discussing are aspects of our mind that we may have thought about. I don't know. We may have thought about it in fleeting, or we may never have thought about before. But we're beginning to kind of root around to see, well, what is this thing called mind? And there's things I can do to kind of control it. There's other times where for most of us, it controls us. So we think, right? And as we begin to kind of lasso it a little bit or whatever, get it connected, and get a hold of it, then we begin to develop some control over that. And again, in the early stages, we just struggle to develop some level of control. But over time, we begin to get better and better at controlling these thoughts and emotions and what as they pop up. And before they take us off in some path that doesn't serve us very well, you know. So... That's the whole thing is become familiar and in control. I use a term sometimes. I might have mentioned a scientific term. Metacognition is being able to watch our thought processes. So we talk about in some of the other work I do, talk about metacognitive awareness is the first step, right? To be aware that we've got this process that we can watch our mind, and then we can kind of develop some analysis with that. So we can become aware of these thoughts and emotions, and then we can begin kind of analyzing them, you know? What is that? I might have told you the story about the lady pushing the shopping cart, you know? And my first thought was she's stealing it, and then I recognized where'd that thought come from, you know? Maybe I stole a shopping cart when I was a kid or something, I don't know. But where did that thought come from? So that we begin to recognize that we kind of analyze that. Then we can begin to regulate that. And we'll talk a little bit about that tonight. You know, we can change these things that we define as problems and that we would normally get sucked into and they would ruin whatever. We can change those to opportunities. Or change our problems into blessings, or into something that works out good for us. You know, the example of waiting in line in a grocery store for me is that used to irritate me, and so I've slowly begun to get to the point where I'm going to beat this thing, so I'm going to wait here in line, and work on my patience. And now I actually look forward well, you know, whatever, however much you can look forward to. I'm all right with just standing there in line and watching what's going on and seeing these little National Enquirer things I never look at and all this other stuff. You know, just kind of taking it in. It's okay. It's okay. Because nothing before I was going to do was going to change that. The only thing that was happening was it made me, it ruined, it messed up my mind. But I was still waiting in line. All right. So we can find ways to kind of turn that around. Once we've got a hold of it, we can find a ways to turn it around and be okay with it. And that's when you start to realize, you know, there's a lot of power in this. With a little meditation that we did before with the body changing, did that how'd that resonate with people? I'm just kind of curious. Yes? No?
I love that.
You do?
I thought it was nice to have something sort of open to think about.
Yeah.
Just like expansive, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I thought it was like,
oh,
it was, I don't know. I like this.
Good. It's an analysis. It was absolute reality. I mean, there's nothing that I said that wasn't true. Okay? We don't think about that stuff. We really don't think about that stuff much. We, you know, in Buddhism, they talk about ignorance and that as being the root of all of our problems. And ignorance is our ignoring. I mean, that's the same kind of root word. Our ignoring reality. You know, what's really going on, we live as if that's not true. We live as if we're not going to, you know, I was an emergency room nurse in a prior life, and, you know, I see people die all the time or seriously injured, and everybody would say, well, I never expected that to happen to me. Well, we never expect that stuff to happen to us, you know. We live as if we're going to live forever. We don't think about the fact that this could be our last day on earth, you know. So that's what they call ignorance. So if we find something, some aspect of reality, and I love some of the science articles and things I come across that have, you know, I read this thing about every cell that died can be traced back 4 billion years. When I thought about that, I mean, it's undivided cell division had led up to that cell that just died. You know, it's like, whoa. I thought that's pretty heavy. But if you drill down in on that and kind of sit with it for a while, it's pretty amazing. You know, reality is pretty amazing if we allow ourselves to do it. So that was an analytical meditation. And I talked before about we have basically two things, right? We have focus meditation, which is where we kind of, you know, polish the microscope, or we could develop the ability to focus, to hone in on something, to control our concentration. And that's what we're doing with the breathing exercises. We're trying to keep our mind from drifting and trying to develop the discipline of focus. Okay? And then as that becomes better and better and better, and it becomes a lot less of a challenge, though it still always is a challenge, but more enjoyable. And then we can find something to analyze. And in this instance, we use something of a scientific nature, but we'll do some other ones that are based on compassion, you know, which is really powerful, and I think it's highly underutilized in the West. You know, we have very analytical minds, and so we're okay with focusing on something analytical. Or something scientific, so to speak. But we don't drill in on things like compassion very often. So we'll do that at some point, too. Other comments? I'm kind of blathering up here. I'm sorry.
for me, the meditation was kind of threw things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine myself as a tiny little pixel being a part of this humongous picture.
Oh, right, right.
And that it did not really have a time dimension because you said, imagine that everybody that's sitting around you now is going to be dead in 100 years. So you took us from the present to the future and then 4 billion years into the past. So time stood still.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking at things changing now, but simultaneously before and ahead of time.
Yeah. We're just a snapshot, aren't we?
We are.
In a, it's a long movie. We're just a snapshot.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely puts things into perspective, and I was very appreciative of being here in this moment.
Yeah, yeah, good. I read a little thing. there's a book called This Book Will Make You Smarter. It's a goofy title, but it's like 150 essays from really top brains around the world. But one of the guys who's an evolutionary scientist said that for the length of time that life has been on Earth and for the length of time that we anticipate the Earth will be around, we're just at the beginning stages. And it's foolish to think that the human race isn't going to be extinct on this tree and something else is going to end up being in charge. I mean, they joke about cockroaches surviving nuclear holocaust and stuff, but he actually says that this is probably highly likely that the human tree will end, the branch, and something else will continue. And I thought, wow, that was pretty heavy. So, yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Jill,
were you too depressed about that?
I'm sorry.
No, I think sometimes when I do get down, I heard Robert Thurman. Whenever you get down about, you're so involved in your life and it seems so big, the consciousness is never going to end. So
right.
Does it really matter?
Yeah.
And it really made me think of the big picture.
Yeah.
And if we're not going to end, so why would you, what matters, what happens?
That's right.
Only use that one when you get
really far
really
out there. And we will talk. If anybody's taken Discovering Buddhism or any other classes here, well, there's a basic underlying belief in Buddhism is that we live forever, right? We just come back as different beings. So if you haven't thought about reincarnation, it's kind of a new twist on things, but it's kind of interesting to think about. So. Tell you what, let's break up into either pairs or triads, and I want you to talk a little bit about how your meditation is going. How are these how are these classes going? Do you feel like this is kind of where you expect it to be, or was somebody like that student of mine in the prison that said, when's it going to happen? Somebody waiting for it to happen, that they're disappointed it hasn't happened yet, whatever that is. Are we kind of on target, do you think, or it's hard knowing? Yeah, it's hard knowing. Okay. So, all right, well, let's break up into pairs or triads and talk about some of the difficulties you had and then some of the maybe insightful good things that you had over the last few weeks since we've started this and maybe what's been going on in your head a little bit. That'll be light, won't it?
I'm just trying to make sure, I'm doing all the time. I'm waiting for found that was that counting your breath is kind of easy or easy to understand. You know, but I found that kind of a leap.
Meditating doesn't sound like
Sorry. Do we need a few more minutes? We're good. We need a few more minutes. Yes, no? You're never going to be done. Face it. That's right. You'll never be done. All right. What does anybody have to share? It says in here I'm supposed to tell you to ask you to share what your partner said, but I'm not like that. No, I'm not going to do that now. So, anybody have anything you want to share? Rat out your partner. Yes, sir.
Well, my girlfriend and I were just talking. I've been meditating for a few years, but she's kind of new to it. And now it's like it's relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I can get into it right away, and it kind of gets relief from it. But when I first did it, it would make me really anxious. Like I would actually watch TV to get over meditating.
Really?
And I guess it's just like you repress a lot of things, and then when you finally give yourself time to feel it, it kind of all comes to the surface. And that's kind of what she was experiencing. Is as you close your eyes, and then your thoughts just start racing.
That's right.
Hammering you down, and then you have to do something mindless to get over it.
But
it does take a while to get used to it and get something out of it.
That's good. That's a really good point. It really is, because people will say, "I'm getting worse." You know, I was better before I started meditating. But I used an analogy before, you know, like those globes. When the silt in the water begins to settle, there's all sorts of garbage in there that you can see. And you don't like to see it necessarily, so we like to keep that silt stirred up and keep our mind thinking about other kind of things. But, you know, be patient with that too. You know, things will show up and they won't necessarily all be good, and just kind of chew on that as you can, you know. And if you have to go back to do something mindless or do something else to distract yourself afterwards, that's fine. It's a slow process, right? It's a slow process, so just kind of keep whittling away at it. But recognize that all that stuff was in that water all along, so it's there, you know?
You talked a minute about control, giving up control as opposed to taking control, and the way I heard you say something early on was that during tonight's exercise that we were gaining control, and I had the feeling that what I had the thought that what we were doing is learning to give up control. I've spent most of my life trying to control everything.
Okay.
Not done particularly well.
Honestly, how does that work for you? That probably doesn't work for you.
Not particularly well.
No. That's a good question. So I'll give it a stab, and that's all I'm going to do is give it a stab. We're working on gaining control of our mind. We can't control anything on the outside. Okay? And I think when we say that, when we think that we're controlling things, we just think that we're controlling things. You know, that's part of the what they would describe as the delusion or the ignorance. We think that we're in control of everything externally, you know. Not everything, but most everything. Some people think they're in control of everything externally. But in truth, we don't control anything externally. The only thing we can control is our own mind. So we're abandoning our expectations, and they'll use the term attachments, right, to things that are external. And we're developing the ability to control the flow of our conscious thoughts, our mind, and being able to control, pick and choose what thoughts and emotions we want to have, right? We can pick the good ones and we can dump the bad ones. That's ultimately what we want to do. We want to pick things that make us happy. And I don't mean happiness in terms of, we'll talk about this another week or so, happiness in terms of necessarily material things, all right? Those don't create happiness. Those, we have an addiction to material things, and they create temporary happiness, but it's just very short term. We can talk about how that, you know, we get something, that high ends pretty quickly. I'm talking about a longer term being at peace and a kind of a content happiness. We've had bits of experiences of that. I know everybody has. And it's managing to kind of allow that to be bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay? So we're controlling our thoughts and emotions. We're picking the ones and getting rid of the ones that do us no good and having more of the ones that do us good.
So we're controlling thoughts and feelings about that which is happening externally.
That's right.
Okay. Where does action come into that?
Our actions contribute to that. All right. Our acts of generosity, our acts of kindness, our acts of forgiveness, those are all things that help us gain that mental freedom and control. Acts of anger, acts of greed, those kind of negative actions make us unhappy. It's a little, it's kind of a childish view, but it's very, very real. Okay, we all know that. And again, we can talk about that. We'll talk about more of that about that next week too. But you know, one of the things I was going to mention, and you know, this is good because we're talking about changing our perceptions. We can change the stuff that comes into our head is going to come into our head. How we interpret that, whether I see that lady stealing that shopping cart or returning that shopping cart, is a decision that I can make. And so we can flip things around. We're often held hostage to our negative states of mind. because somewhere in there we think that's going to make us happy.
But so, what kind of gratifying thing would come out from our minds thinking that?
What's the gratification in thinking that we'll be happy with doing that?
Yes.
I don't know. There, you know, it's like a needle in the arm. There's an addiction.
Like this, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but I know that I do it.
It's an addiction. We have it with food. We have it with alcohol. We have it with drugs. We have it with material things. We think that if we get what we want, well, first we think we want it, and then when we get it, we think we're going to be happy, but it doesn't last. It's not. Buddhism will call that suffering. Okay. It's cold in here, so I turn that thing up. Then it gets hot in here, so I turn that thing down. So then it gets cold in here, so I turn that thing up. We go through our lives turning things up and down, up and down, up and down, trying to get comfortable. And it's not going to work. You know, comfort's in here. We go through our lives wanting to buy something, right? Once we get it, you know, we're like this for a little while and it drops back off, right? Now we're looking for the next fix, and it's a constant thing. We're trying to get ahead. Who are we trying to get ahead of?
Can I get you to tell my wife that thing about the thermostat?
Sure. It won't help. But seriously, I mean, who are we trying to get ahead of? Everyone's trying to get ahead of everybody else. So, you know, when we stop, this is analytical meditation, so when you stop and really drill in on something like that, think about something you bought. We talked about eating chocolate, you know. You could do it very mindfully. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying it. We just, you know, they say don't get attached to that enjoyment. Enjoy it. But it's the attachment that'll cause the damage. You know, we eat them so fast, we're thinking about the next one. But we do that with everything. You know, we buy things, we're thinking about the next one, the next one, the next one. It's really liberating, you know, to begin to cut some of those threads of materialism. And people are there's kind of a trend and people are trying to do that. And it really does, you know, say, no, I don't need that. It's hard, but that's the idea. So it's back to controlling our thoughts and our perceptions. Okay? And step number one is being aware of them. And most of the time we're totally unaware of it. You know, totally unaware of it.
So I don't mean to be picky, but I'm going to use your example for a second there. It doesn't matter whether it's hot or cold, whether or not someone turns it up or down. It's my, it's how I would, the intention of what I do in response to that person, whether it's negative or positive, whether it's supportive or argumentative, whether it's caring and loving, or whether it's, damn it, quit turning down the thermostat.
Right.
So I can control that part of it, of what my intention is, regardless of what happens. I may never get the temperature the way I want it to be.
It'll never be the way you want it
to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was the saying is success is getting what you want and happiness is wanting what you get, you know? So it's, and I'm not saying that we're not cold and we're not hot. I'm just saying we're always going to be either cold or hot. And just an acceptance of that, you know.
What's important is how I relate to that person.
Yeah, and it might not even be the person. It might just be your own expectations, you know. Your own expectations. We have a teacher here, Rabina. You'll see her picture around. And some of you might have heard her too, but she talks about, you know, if you hear, she's got this infatuation with chocolate cake. She's always talking about chocolate cake. But, you know, so you hear a restaurant has really, really good chocolate cake. So you go and you order this chocolate cake, and they bring you carrot. They're out of chocolate cake. If you're not attached, you would recognize that, you know, I ordered chocolate, but they're out of it. They got carrot. That's good. I like carrot cake. If you're attached, you might go ballistic because they don't have chocolate cake. Or you might not go ballistic. What does that do to your mind, you know? When you don't get what you're expecting, if it causes problems for you, then there's work to be done. There was actually, when we were breaking up, I tried to think, I like this little thing. It's a good book. It's called Buddha's Brain by Richard Hansen. And he talks about what happens neurologically when we meditate and stuff. But he has one in here that I've used in a number of classes. So, whereas you work on this, because it's really a gradual and subtle process. We don't recognize it. It's kind of like growing. We don't see it happening. But so over time, he's got these four stages. Stage one, he uses these things called first and second darts as, you know, things that irritate us. But stage one, you're caught in a reaction and you don't realize it. Your partner forgets to bring milk home and you complain angrily without seeing your reaction is over the top, okay? Stage two, this is when we practice, more practice. You realize you've been hijacked by greed or hatred in a broader sense, but cannot help yourself internally. You're squirming, and you can't stop grumbling bitterly about the milk, okay? So we begin to recognize, but you're still going to kind of grumble to yourself, right? Stage three, some aspects of the reaction arises, but you don't act it out. You feel irritated, but you remind yourself that your partner does a lot for you already, and getting cranky will just make things worse. Okay? There really nothing good comes out of getting angry. Stage four, the reaction doesn't even come up anymore. You sometimes forget you ever had an issue. You understand there's no milk, and you calmly figure out what you're going to do next with your partner. Okay? There's just no milk in the house. That's just the way it is, you know? And we don't, you know, in those early stages, we think people are spending a lot of time trying to get us, you know? And they're not. A lot of times, it's just mindless. It's their act of mindlessness. And we don't recognize that our act of mindlessness causes the same reaction in the other people. That's not my problem. That's just the way I am, you know. So it's a gradual, constant. It's a constant process. But those things, as we recognize, oh, here comes that thing: irritation, anger. You know, it never goes to rage instantly. People think that it is. I just fly off the handle. I'm in rage. And there's some people that it happens that quickly. But it's irritation or frustration. Then there's anger, and then there's, you know, we let it grow. And we catch it when it first there. We can kind of begin to work with that. Why am I angry? Switch that around. Is there not something good that this person has done for me that they've just forgotten something? Or they're not doing something this time? You know, is it really intentional? Are they really stealing that shopping cart? You know, or is it just my perception of that situation? And we don't know. But we can choose which story we want. You know? And I tell you, I guarantee you, one story will be a lot better feeling than the other story. You know? And it's our choice. Questions, comments, other thoughts? Tell you what, let's do. We're going to do a meditation, and I want you to think for a minute about something that's happened recently that has irritated you, maybe really made you angry, or whatever. I don't know where everybody's level is different on these stages, right? So think of something relatively recently that bothered you. Maybe even something where you had words with somebody, you allowed yourself to get angry. And just kind of put that on the side for a little bit, right? We can do that. We can kind of set it over there for a minute and bring our focus on something else. So get in your seven positions, feet, legs, back, arms, crown of your head, your jaw, your eyes, your tongue. A few big breaths in and out. Think of the pure white going in, the soot coming out. Count your breathing a little bit to settle your mind. Now recall that experience where you had that either impatience or anger. Just remember how it played out, your reaction. What happened if you said something? Recall the other person's response. Notice your physical sensation when you relive that. What's happening to your peace of mind? What's happening to your the back of your neck? Maybe your heart rate goes up a little bit. Now think about the disadvantages and the harmful effects of this thought process. The cortisol coursing through your bloodstream. When your anger led to angry words, how did that feel? How might that have impacted people around that were watching? Did it make them happy? Did it make the situation better, or did it make it worse? Now picture what would have happened if you had not reacted, or if you had reacted differently. Would everything have dissipated? Allow your breathing to slow and count your breathing again. Were you able to relive that experience? Did some of you have difficulty doing that? Playing it again. Some people do it really well, have no trouble at all with it. Did you find that there was any physical sensation that went along with that? Like what? You grit your teeth? Okay.
My throat clenched up.
Okay.
That flush kind of with anger again.
Yeah. Was it a pleasant experience? I mean, it might be, I don't know. Were you able to replay it with a different storyline? Okay? To let go or just not get into the dance, right? That's what it is. It's a dance that we do with this other person or people. Was it hard to do it differently? I think for some people, that different script doesn't arise naturally, but it takes some effort, which is okay. How did it play out when you changed it? Or did it? Was it hard to imagine? Yes, sir.
Well, I was thinking of a time that I had responded from a position of defensiveness because there was actually something I didn't do, but I had overreacted because of the defensiveness. So as soon as I kind of realized why I was so quick to respond, it then was easier to see how I was contributing to it.
Yeah. Once we get hooked, once they tap you on the shoulder and you become a dance partner, It's hard to get out of it, isn't it? It really does become a partnership. It's difficult. Our teacher told a story. I love this. I might have said this before, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself. That a couple that were always fighting, and so the wife went to a teacher to ask for help. You know, my husband's always picking on me. We're always getting in fights. So he gave her this medicine, and he said, as soon as your husband gets home, take some of this medicine, but the key is don't swallow it. Keep it in your mouth. And she said it worked. You know? There's always two people involved with it, you know? And it's hard to do if we're used to doing that kind of thing. But it feels better. You know? And here's the thing, though, too. We replay. So those of you, I'll ask. So those of you that had this negative situation, is this the first time you've relived it? How many times has that story gone, that tape gone through your head, you know?
Enough.
Yeah, enough. So every time it plays, our cortisol levels go up, our blood pressure goes up, all those physical attributes take place. And we typically, when we replay it, we don't give it a positive spin. We intensify the negative spin. I had a father-in-law that had a nephew that they stopped speaking to each other 15 years ago, and neither of them could remember what it was. But they, you know, it just kept on. Whatever story was no longer existed, but the sensation they kept replaying over and over and over again. You know, we do that. So we can change that tape if we want to. But it takes effort. It takes effort to change that tape. But the benefits are huge. You know, it's like that milk story, right? Eventually, slowly, slowly, we can stop that. and change things up. And we realize that physically it has immense benefits. Other thoughts?
What do you do with the guilt afterwards?
Guilt's a funny thing, isn't it? Here, it's funny because the Tibetans don't have a term for guilt. We spent forever trying to describe to Geshe what guilt is. And we're so good with it, right, in the West. Everybody knows here what guilt is. They use the term regret, okay? Which, so you know, once you recognize, there's four. Do you remember what the four things are? Something, regret. And then, you know, you kind of tell yourself, I'm not going to do it again. And you may not keep that promise, but you're planting a seed, and you try to remember, you try to look at when this situation may arise again, and you have a chance to do it again. There is an opportunity for forgiveness, and they talk a lot about that, the benefits of forgiveness. It's not for the other person, it's for yourself, you know.
Regret is a call to action to make you want to change it.
What do you mean self-cherishing?
Well, you really just, it's hard to explain it, isn't it? But Geshe-la said you're really just kind of wallowing and like swallowing the poison.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And you can just, I really wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
And that's not going to save you, but regret, or do I have it wrong? Regret. How does that work?
You swallow poison hoping the other person gets sick. Is that one?
But then, let's see, that works. But regret, you wish you hadn't swallowed the poison. Maybe it's backwards.
No, I think you're probably right.
The guilt just makes you stay. You're only thinking about yourself.
Yeah. So you add suffering onto suffering. So then, yeah.
But regret makes you want to change it. So it's a call. I think it was a call to action.
Okay.
You want to change your mind and not recreate that.
You don't want to create that negativity.
Yeah.
So you're looking for the antidote.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Regret has you. Okay, that's it. Guilt makes you, dang gum, I wish I hadn't solved that. And regret, where's the antidote?
That's right. Did you all hear that? Okay. Yeah, I remember that now. So we really can. It's a call to action. There's a forgiveness piece of it. And we spent a lot of time talking about, do you have to tell the person? Can you forgive somebody without telling them? And you can. You know, again, it's on your side. The idea is, it's helpful to tell somebody, but you don't have to. And you don't have to forget. Forgiveness doesn't mean you have to necessarily forget it. You just understand that other person's acting out of ignorance as well. So, I'm sorry, you can say.
There's a lot of that control. It seems related to a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the situations that you might imagine where somebody was, you know, doing something to make you mad, and it seems like just kind of backing off, whatever the scenario was where you kind of back off of it, it seems like you're giving them control, but in fact it's in a lot of these situations, a lot of the scenarios I could imagine, you're actually disarming it. And
absolutely.
The control in here, you're also just kind of, in a way, you're kind of controlling the situation by not reacting in the way that you initially feel like you react.
Yeah.
And you're actually controlling that whole situation, even though it may be by doing nothing.
That's right. Absolutely.
And yeah.
No. I had one of my students, a 15-year-old kid at Dillon, said, you know, talk about this, and then when's the next opportunity that you're going to face? You may face this thing that will cause you anger or a similar situation. And, you know, he had something going on with another student, and they're always trying to engage each other in a negative way. And he said, I recognized that he had my remote control. He was he was running me, and I took my remote control back. And he couldn't control me anymore. Because that's what he was trying to do. He wanted, you know, he was trying to engage me in this thing. And normally he would have gotten engaged in it. And it would have been bad for both of them, you know. But he recognized, he gained control by not getting into that, not going where his mind would normally go. So that's what we're doing, is we're controlling our own minds in the situation and recognizing it makes things better. Other comments, questions, or thoughts? Is this working for everybody? Okay. All right. Just want to make sure. The handout for next week is this transforming negative experience into positive ones. It's a difficult skill to learn, but it's worth learning. And, you know, pick something small. If something really enrages you, that's not where you start chipping away at it, you know. Find the little things that annoy you. You can all list probably a half dozen things here now that annoy you. And pick one of them. You're going to know when it's going to come up again, probably, and when it's going to annoy you again. And use that as an opportunity to not allow your mind to play that little story that's annoying. You know, just decide you're going to turn that off. And it's going to fight with you. You know, there's this, I think with this guilt too, there's this kind of a self-righteous. My wife talks about that a lot. I have the right to be angry. You know, I've got the right. I feel like I've earned it. And we feel like it. It's our little jolt of whatever. So find something small and see if you can't kind of control your reaction to that. And you'll struggle with it, but, you know, see if you can't gain control of it. And it'll feel really good, you know, when you finally get control of those things. And then you can work your way up. One of our members here, Andre, his son was killed a few years back, was stabbed right before Christmas in a bar downtown. And Andre and I would go to Nash Prison together, and I remember the prisoners out there had asked, you know, they talk about anger control and management, and what would happen if family was threatened. And, you know, Andre said, I don't know what I would do in that situation. And then, ironically enough, then shortly after that, his son got killed. And he had total forgiveness for that man that stabbed his son, because he recognized, you know, my son's dead, and this man's life went to pieces the moment he killed my son. His whole life changed, you know. And he really was able to let go. And he actually went to court to defend, help, you know, lessen the sentence for this man that killed his son. It's a powerful story. And there's some video clips with it, too. But, you know, he never realized that he had that in him until he was faced with that situation. But it's through gradually working himself up and practicing a little bit at a time, he was, you know, that was his reaction to it, which was really astonishing. It was really astonishing. So, all right, well, that's kind of a cheery note to leave things on here. Isn't it? Sorry about that. Andre is a great person if you get a chance to come here and see him. Any other thoughts or comments before we end here this evening? So think about, and this is a good idea with your own practice. You know, there's a motivation. Set your intentions ahead of time. It kind of, all right, here's why I'm doing this. Just like physical exercise, you know, it kind of gets you psyched up to do it. And then at the end, you know, kind of revisit that. What was the reason? Dedicate that to, you know, the people that I make angry, or dedicate that to my family, or, you know, find something to give it up to this is why I did that. So think about tonight, you know, everybody came out on a pretty messy night, actually, and you had other things you could have been doing, but you chose to come here to better your minds, and from that, somebody is going to benefit beyond just you, right? ultimately this is for us, but it's ultimately for the people that we love and that are around us too. So just take a moment to think about that. And it's a good idea to do that at the end of your meditation sessions too. And then for next week, you know, keep on practicing. Find something that annoys you a little bit that you can play around with and see if you can't tweak your mind a little bit. I forgot to mention before, but there's meditation sessions here in the morning at 7:30, right, Jill? Jill's one of the leaders. I volunteered, but I haven't stepped up to the plate yet. Maybe I will. But it's Sundays at 9 o'clock. They have a meditation session here. And what the Sunday is a sitting and then a walking and then another.
It's Friday. They're all different.
Okay. So they're all a little bit different. If you want to experience some walking meditations, they'll do those sometimes. It'll be in here. The gompa will all be set up like it is. And they're good. Group meditations are really a good way to kind of, you know, once you're there, you're going to do it, right? So it's a good way to kind of make yourself do it. It's longer, going to be longer than 5 minutes, right?
Wow.
The whole thing's an hour, but it's not in one sitting, I'm assuming. Could be.
It depends on. Yeah, today was interesting because two people came that had experienced, you know, meditation. So usually I talk, I'll set it up.
Yeah.
And then you kind of talk, you know, and then you break it up. Normally do that. We had five new college students, so I just slowly said things, but they were fine being silent enough. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big chunk of time.
An hour.
But if there's anybody new, I usually say a few things so that
yeah.
It's just too much to leave a new person with all that. It was a lot for me to sit there.
An hour is a long sitting. I've done a 90-minute one. That's a long sitting too, you know. But that's nothing compared to what some people are doing. So that's a lot of exploration of your mind. But anyway, the morning sessions are good opportunities too. So, all right, 8:30, pretty good. Thank you all for coming. Be safe. Careful going home. Be mindful. Has anybody tried that? How's that drive home? This is a good night to be mindful to go home, okay? Be careful going home. Good night.